And you're listening to Shift Happens, the spoken word on Kootenai Co-op Radio, 93.5 FM in Nelson. Anyway, my name is Jeff. I'm one of the irregular hosts, but I'm working on it.
My name is Anna. I'm more regular.
Mm-hmm. Really? Are you regular?
No, actually, no. That's a lie. I'm not really regular at all.
Oatmeal.
Right. I look oatmeal. Regular.
Yeah. Too much information for our listeners, huh?
I'm Sherry.
Sherry Carey.
Sherry Carey.
And we're talking to Selena.
Are you there, Selena?
I'm here.
Are you all there?
Mostly here.
Yeah?
Most of the time.
Is that kind of like mostly dead?
Sometimes.
Ooh. Yeah, okay. Sorry, that's my favorite part of Princess Bride, the Mel Brooks. You know, he's only partly dead and gives him that big, huge pill.
Oh, right. Been a while since I've seen that one.
I know. You need to bring it back on the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have to put off tea party for 1 week, Jeff.
So,
Sherry, explain to us why we're talking to Selena.
Why are we talking
apart
to Selena?
Apart from the fact that she has a cool name.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I've known Selena for years. She's awesome. She is an accredited coach. Like, she's an expert.
Ooh.
I'm an accredited coach.
There's finally an expert.
No one gives me any credit.
There's an expert here behind a mic somewhere now. We've got Selena today.
Oh, so are we supposed to bow down to the mic and say, I'm not worthy, I'm not worthy?
Please don't.
Yeah? Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for having me.
Actually, part of why Selena's here, just as, you know, today's show is covering this really intense article that came up in my Facebook feed, and, you know, we shared it, all three of us talked, you know, Jeff and Anna and I, and then Selena and I spoke about it. And she had interest to be a part of the process today.
And so what we were going to do is just hand the mic over to you, and we're going to sit back and drink some coffee. Is that okay?
Silence
on the line there.
You can tell we're all kind of in a crazy mood today, so please bear with us.
I'm trying to figure out if it's too much coffee or not enough.
No, because we're going to put our hand on the radio and you will be healed today.
Oh, yay, barely, brother.
All of the wounded healers, reach out to the radio.
Mm-hmm.
This is a show for you.
Touch that speaker.
Yeah.
No, not there.
That's exactly what we started talking about, is this article called Do You Love to Be Needed or Need to Be Loved? And it's addressing the wounded healer. It's addressing those of us who grew up in situations that weren't exactly healthy, and we developed coping mechanisms. And one of those is needing to help everybody else.
Yeah, the rescuer.
Yeah. Sherry, by the way, hit me over the head with this
literally,
a couple weeks ago.
Literally.
And I was reeling for like a week because I read this article and went, oh my God, I'm...
Yeah, she wrote it on a 2x4 and then whacked you upside the head with it, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah. Well, I'm known for that. I might as well be acting as if.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, this is true.
I think we've all got this.
Yeah.
Anybody who's in a helping capacity, a helping field, a role that is a service role within the community, whatever community that may be, I think that we all carry a little bit of this, and perhaps a little bit, you know, is just fine, but lots is out of whack, out of balance, and in my opinion, is particularly sticky in its presentation on how we show up with other people.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're talking about is equating being needed with being loved.
Mm-hmm.
So, Selena...
Selena.
We were trying to...
I'm not a guru, that's for sure.
Selena, are you resolved and in balance and whole in this regard?
Absolutely not.
Good answer.
Did you like how the absolutely was really long and we were like, yeah, she's got this.
So I guess we got to call someone else then, huh?
yes, you should have found another guru.
Mm-hmm.
Darn.
Yeah, no, far from resolved, but... certainly heavily engaged in the work.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
So how long have you been at it? I can't talk. How long have you been at it?
I was actually thinking about that this morning when rereading the article, and it's been probably my whole life, pretty much consciously for the better part of 25 years.
Wow, that's good.
So you started when you were four?
Approximately.
Okay. Wow.
Give or take a few years.
Actually, it was five. My first conscious memory of this is at about 5 years old.
Yeah.
So are you open to sharing that? Can you nutshell it? What happened at five? Like where you became aware of this?
I just recall having some kind of recognition that I did not feel nurtured and loved and validated, and I was seeking that outside of myself at five. And I had some level of recognition of that. Obviously, I can put words to that now. I'm sure I couldn't have shared that with you at five. But I have a very distinct memory of that.
One of the things that struck me when I was reading the article was the whole too good child thing. I remember my parents talking to other people about how good I was and how I basically didn't say anything or do anything unless I was previously given permission to for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a particular part of that article or the type of the too good child or the caregiver personality that you could relate to?
Oh, so much. I could relate to so much throughout that whole article and in varying degrees. Obviously, it's not all pertinent, but a lot of it was, for sure. And being a caregiver, somewhat by nature and then somewhat also by conditioning and experiences of this nature definitely influenced that, but I've been definitely in that role for as long as I can remember.
What struck me just in the last couple of weeks when Sherry knocked me over the head with this was the desire to not care for anybody anymore.
Yeah.
That's what I'm afflicted with now.
I told you, see, you were healed.
Jeff is suffering the consequences.
Yeah.
But I kind of wanted to say, all right, fine, I'll step out of that role altogether, at least for a while. How do you manage to be a counselor and not lose yourself in the process?
With a great deal of awareness and conscious hard work at it and healing around it. I mean, the healing journey is, I know we all know here, is not a short one. It's a lifelong one, I believe. And, I started giving this focus and attention in my late teens, early 20s. And it's been constant ever since. Now, today, I'm far, far more engaged and studied in it and experienced in that conscious journey. But, I mean, there's so many pieces. Reading that article, again, was just like so many insights and aha moments just going and reading through it. It is definitely an article to be read more than once and savored and reflected upon throughout it.
Yeah, so just for the listeners, on shifthappensnow.ca, I did a post for today's show called Do You Love to Be Needed or Need to Be Loved? And in the first paragraph is a link to that article that we're talking about with the same title. So if you're interested...
So click on the link and it'll change your life.
If you're...
Okay. Well, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I read that article... one of the pieces that stood out to me at the very beginning of it is where the doctor Sherry, unlike this Sherry,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Not a doctor.
Yes, the
not
woman who wrote the article's name is Dr. Sherry Schreiber.
Exactly.
Say that 10 times in a row, huh?
Sherry Schreiber.
Sherry Schreiber.
Doc Sherry said, you know, in the course of reading this article, there is a high likelihood that you will start somatically checking out during the reading. And so I was like, okay, cool. You know, it's like, fasten your seatbelts. I'm going on one of the loop-de-loop roller coasters today, you know, because mm-hmm. I'm always willing to be intense. Mm-hmm. I thrive
really?
On it.
Really? I've never noticed that.
Selena's laughing.
Mm-hmm. Never experienced it.
So yeah, no, sure enough, like within a few moments of reading, I could feel myself, my lids got heavy, I was feeling sleepy, mm-hmm. and I was dissociating, mm-hmm. you know, I was checking out. Mm-hmm. And I really, like Selena, like I've been aware of this aspect of myself for a very long time. In fact, in high school, I thought about becoming a psychologist. I was really drawn to that work, but I already was aware at that point in my life, 17 years of age, that if I went down that route, that I was likely to always take my work home with me, that it would be very hard for me to disconnect from the client.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I didn't make a decision to go in that direction.
I remember thinking that too. I was really into psychology, but I thought to myself, yeah, I'm never going to be doing anything except worrying about everybody else's problems.
And yeah, and that kind of sucks, and I'm already doing that, and I really don't want to do that anymore. And in my case, you know, I was the mother to my mother.
Yeah.
You know, so by the time I'm coming out of high school, like I'm ready to be doing something different for me.
Yeah.
And so I did. But, you know, we roll ahead the clock and here I am. This is, you know, the bulk of what I do with people is supporting them. And, you know, I'm holding space. I'm asking questions. I'm working on disassemblage processes with belief systems and on and on and on. So I'm in the thick of it.
Mm-hmm. So that's a good question that I've wondered over and over again. Is it appropriate for people who have this particular tendency to be healers?
I had a really brilliant
insight.
It's
called empathy.
Yeah, well, this was this hit me like a lightning bolt after the three of us spoke on the phone, you know, the day you refer to getting hit with the 2x4. But what came to me, and I think I'd shared it with you guys, I really thought, wow, you know, there's a glut of individuals on the planet right now, wounded healer archetype. And, you know, we were all kind of fostered within the same time frame. Our parents likely were inundated with Dr. Spock mm-hmm. BS, you know, non-attachment parenting styles and different focus on the world stage on what made you a success and achievement and all of that focus. And so that's where we came from. And in it, you know, there was a lot that was nourished and nurtured in us kind of in a contrary manner. We became highly sensitive and empathic and really driven towards service, mm-hmm. really wanting to care for others, be present for others, nurture, love, show up, cherish others, including the planet, all living, you know, sentient beings.
But not ourselves.
But, and this is the piece, in that process of being driven so outward, mm-hmm. We were, you know, and the article goes into great depth about this. Our own needs were completely negated and non-existent. That's mm-hmm. what we were raised within. That's the form mm-hmm. that we came out of. And so we are driven externally. And then here we are. You know, we're at that point or critical mass stage where what's really needed right now is not a whole bunch of caregivers, caretakers, unbalanced, wounded mm-hmm. healer archetype, you know, caregiving types. What we need are balanced individuals within their power mm-hmm. that have the capacity to hold for others and to stand for what's important, including the planet. And
you mean like the Donald?
We won't go there.
And okay. And come from a place of reciprocity. Mm-hmm. You know, I love the word in Quechua, it's Aini, you know, to really be focused on the movement back and forth. Not necessarily that we give to take, but rather that we're aware that we need to give to ourselves first. Mm-hmm. You know, it's that old adage of if you're on the airplane and there's something that occurs, you put your oxygen mask on first before you help the elderly or any children or infirm mm-hmm. that are flying with mm-hmm. you. And I think that this was the insight that came to me. It's like, wow, you know, all of that band of time that produced all of us, that are in this mode to be of assistance, to be in service.
Mm-hmm.
It fostered all kinds of hypersensitive and extra gifts, more attention to being aware of what was happening within the home and being really, really finely tuned to the feeling and nuances of everyone around us. And then we got out of whack with it.
Yeah.
Because we were never grounded out for ourselves. And now, you know, when we get to the point in our life, people always say, you know, after 40, you know, it's kind of like the middle finger goes up and you finally stand in what you are. And now we're turning to ourselves and saying, okay, like this isn't totally working. Mm-hmm. You know, we want to see balance. We want to feel that, you know, we're full. And so then we do the work. And so truly, we are the ones that we've been waiting for. Because it's an opportunity for the wounded healer archetype to come into balance.
So, Selena, are you the one that you were waiting for? Or were waiting
sure.
for?
For certain.
Yeah?
Yes. Yeah. And something that I just want to add to what Sherry was just speaking to was mm-hmm. we also have a deficit in understanding or allowing ourselves to receive.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Receiving is incredibly difficult.
Yes.
For a lot of people, not just, you know, wounded healers, but for in particular, for that archetype, for that caregiving personality, because we identify so much with the giving, that receiving we feel guilt and shame around, or embarrassment, or some weakness even.
Well, for me, it's waiting for the other shoe to drop. You
right.
know, that
yeah.
was the programming of early childhood.
Yeah, exactly.
Makes me and really uncomfortable.
There's also this hyper-vigilance to balance the scales. That's what I find.
Yeah.
If someone gives something to me, like I've learned to accept that, but then I have this push to balance it out, to give back and then some, to,
so
I don't know,
to some. So you're not vulnerable.
Yeah, exactly.
In
and
an
so,
ironic
so
way,
you're
someone
not being
can accuse
in.
Me.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That
you don't
is
want to
a,
be accused of that, right?
Yeah, it's a very vulnerable place to be the
yeah.
receiver.
Yes.
It's a power position to be the giver, really. That's something that I had to come to realizing in reading this article.
But the submissive is always in control, Anna.
Well, there you go. Then I'm never in control.
The receiver. The receiver is in control.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've got me all confused.
Well, it's yeah, like yin true. Begets yang, right?
Like, I don't even know. Yeah. The one thing that struck me when I was reading that and some of the other exercises we went through in order to prepare for the show is I don't even
we
really know what I want. If somebody asks me, what do you want? I can't even pick a movie.
No kidding.
What?
It's brutal.
I hate it.
So what do you want to watch? I don't know.
I don't know.
But
I don't
what
care.
About this
Whatever
one?
You
I don't
watch.
Care.
You know, it's like I don't know what I want most of the time.
And that's why the longest standing running performance in your household is the live tea party video.
No.
I don't want that.
We've only seen it once.
Twice.
Well, because we shared it with...
To the power of 1,000.
Yeah, there you go.
Maybe three times.
Well, I'm not that bad.
But this is the big thing that you've just hit. And I mean, the article speaks to it too, which then spurred on a whole bunch of needs assessment exercises. I know for me in my last relationship, I was at this major turning point with him and I wanted to have a conversation, you know, around my needs. And I said to him, do you know what I need? And he said, yes. And then he thought about it and he said, No, actually, I don't. And I started to laugh and I said, either do I.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm laughing about it now as well because, you know, that was a couple of years in. Like, it would have maybe been a little bit, you know, better, useful to have some of, you know, that clarity around my yeah. needs before engaging in that intimacy mm-hmm. with another.
Well, this brings up a discussion that Anna and I had recently, very recently, because we've realized sometimes our motivations are to help the other, and we've been doing this, we've been doing stuff for the other person for a long time, and then it's like, well, and then going into resistance after a while and saying, why am I doing this for someone else? What about me? And then,
actually, that's not resistance, that's resentment.
Well, exactly,
yeah.
exactly. And then, well, she didn't require me to do that, and I didn't require her to do the things that she did for me.
Exactly.
But we're so conditioned to doing stuff.
Anticipate other people's needs so you don't get into trouble.
I know, but we're making them up.
I know.
Yeah.
It's all our projection of what someone else wants, and we've never even taken the time to check in and see if it's true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So do you have any examples of that yourself, Selena?
One or two, maybe.
Just one or two? All right.
Geez, I don't know if I can think of a specific example right now. Sherry, maybe you can help me think of something that we've spoken about recently.
Anticipating needs of others.
Sorry.
Well, I mean, I know that I tabled something with you with, you know, regard to one of your closest friendships and mm-hmm. allowing her to be supportive of you prior to your surgery. Mm-hmm. And what I was hearing from you was that you had already made the decision that, you know, her world was too chaotic. You know, she didn't have the capacity to support you, which I'm not saying is an unreasonable assessment. It quite could likely be very true, but mm-hmm. what felt like for me with regard to you was that you were unwilling to even ask to give her an opportunity to step forward for you, which I know isn't the same example that you guys mm-hmm. just rolled,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but it's
true.
It's within that landscape.
Yeah, it's similar. Yeah.
I find myself often, I really hesitate. I will like be sick and drag myself off the sofa to make my cup of tea than to ask Jeff to make me a cup of tea.
So I have to anticipate.
Which is ridiculous, too.
So I have to be ultra sensitive to
her
because...
And then he feels bad if he doesn't make it because he didn't know I wanted it. You know, it's this whole trap. It's ridiculous.
This is
what I live with every day.
So this is caregiver?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it looks like?
No, that was a good example, Sherry, just in that, again, placing someone else's needs or what I assume is their needs or project is their needs and sacrifice my own, which is very, very common and typical of a caregiver, right? It's just part of the package.
Look, I have to say, in our friendship, the moment that Selena allowed me to be supportive of her, it was a banner day. You know, I might get a little weepy right now about it, thinking on that day.
Don't cry on Mike. I'm the only one that can do that.
I know, just you're allowed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I may have a need to cry.
All right.
I may have a need to emote live.
We can wipe off the mic later.
But, yeah, you know, Selena is really, really strong and extremely capable and successful and has helped so many people to success in their lives. So for
so
her
she
to,
like Tony Robbins or what?
the mini version.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
But when you allowed me, Selena, to be present for you and to hold a space for you, you know, that meant a lot because there was an opportunity to be trustworthy, you know, to have capacity for you. You know, to be able to hold that space, and it meant a lot because I also knew that it was horrendously vulnerable for you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, horrifyingly so. On some levels, right? It's the vulnerability piece, allowing myself to be seen in vulnerability.
But is it not also liberating for you too? I mean, like I think about the Deepaks and the various gurus that are doing their thing, and people typically do not allow their gurus to be human, and there is this pressure upon them to always be on and always be, you know, the spiritual, powerful one. Do you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. When I first started in the coaching world and the healing world,
yeah.
I totally had that mindset of I have to be perfect. I can't show any weakness. I have to be healed.
Right.
If I'm going to teach this or guide people on that journey.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I let go of that some time ago and I shifted how I taught over the last 10 years have really been, you know, as honest as and sharing and vulnerable as I can be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at whatever point in time, to share the real truth, because I have an understanding that that's where people connect and relate if you are presenting yourself as someone who is healed and whole in that capacity, and it will show eventually that you're not. And, you know, what good does that do anybody?
If you see Buddha on the road, kill him.
You better watch it. You might get shot for that.
I don't know.
Yeah. So what does that saying mean, Jerry?
Just means the one that considers and proclaims themselves as enlightened. Well, it could mean a million things, but for me, the one that proclaims themselves as the guru, as the leader, as the whole one, as the one who's, you know what, doesn't smell. You know?
What?
You know?
Oh.
Yeah, be done with that. Take that down. Crush that image. It's.
But how am I supposed to make any cash?
You know, there's this really cool thing. I don't know if I've ever talked about it yet on the show, but down in southern Alberta on one of the Blackfoot reserves, I learned this very cool thing about the word leader, our chief. Have I shared this with you guys?
No.
Selena's probably heard this before. So in Blackfoot, there's in the original Blackfoot language, there was no word for chief. The closest that you could kind of put over in that area and say, well, it's like chief, was a very long set of words, which I don't know and I won't repeat. You know?
But you could say the words and everyone would think that you know what you were talking about.
I could just make it up.
I
wouldn't
do
that
all the
because
time.
I'll honor the original Blackfoot language. But
anyway,
what the closest that they had that meant chief was the one that it becomes apparent to follow. And it feels like that with regard to if you see Buddha in the road, you know, kill him, right? Anybody who's putting themselves up there and saying, well, blah, 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 and I know it all and I've got it figured out, inevitably we've seen them all fall. I mean, you can just do a quick search under, what is it, plastic shaman and false gurus online. There's a whole website derailing all of the New Age fraud and plastic shaman, it's called.
Right.
And, you know, there's a lot of people that put themselves forward as healed. And then what I like to say is spirit calls them forth to put themselves out there, their head on the chopping block, because indeed, whatever remains of their ego or their mindset, their self-image must be resolved, must be axed from the rest of them. And that's why so many of them tumble off the pedestal, I believe. So have I totally digressed?
Well, it doesn't always happen, though. Like, I think about some of the gurus, I think of some of the religious leaders over the last decades where they have their scandals, but a lot of them still coming out, or they come out smelling like a rose. And people still give them their money, even though they're clearly not in their integrity. And I'm not going to mention names because I'll probably get charged with slander or whatever. But people are prone to give their power away. That's just the way I see it anyway.
You know, for me, the thing isn't to... I don't expect or want people to be perfect.
Yeah.
I don't want them to claim to be perfect.
Yeah.
It's irritating to me when people set themselves up, because you know that that's not humility, and that's not...
Well, it's not accurate.
Accurate, no. So then you're just waiting for the shoe to drop. You know, where's it all going to unravel?
So I'm intrigued about your gig, Selena. What do you actually do?
That's a good question. That's a good question. So basically, how I describe what I do is to, you know, walk alongside women on their journey of transformation and exploration of their soul self, who they truly are, going through processes of healing and release and surrender to the darker, shadowy aspects of themselves, embracing them, that those parts of themselves that they've denied.
Yeah.
And in turn, you know, the consequences of that. And again, based on this same sort of theory around, you know, having to be the good person or whatever role you're taking on, the caregiver, what have you. And helping women come into their full authentic self to whatever degree their, you know, readiness is there to do that and where they are on that journey. And again, just sharing through my own experience of this, you know, I've dedicated myself to this path of healing, essentially, mm-hmm. and for myself and for others as well, but now primarily for myself because I have a deeper understanding of how to do that.
Right.
Right. And then sharing that with other women. I work particularly with women, the empowerment of women and particularly women in business. I believe business, going into business for yourself is a prime platform for this kind of personal work because
right.
it brings it all up for you and reveals itself through your processes.
Well, there's a huge threat in a man's world, right? When a woman is in business for herself, she's a huge threat, mm-hmm. whether men typically will admit it or not, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, being there for someone, a business woman, I think that's a really good place to go. So do you do this in a one-on-one kind of thing? Do you do seminars? Do you do infomercials? Like what's your actual medium?
Yeah. So for the majority of my career, it has been mostly one-on-one work.
Yeah.
Some group work as well in you know, the last decade. But I'm shifting and moving more to, I guess a further expanded reach, moving online, running retreats and workshops as well.
I'm seeing you in a revival tent. Would that work?
yeah, that would
yeah.
do.
So yeah. What kind of retreats and workshops do you do?
So the retreats are family constellation or family of origin healing retreat, as well as Soulful Women in Business Retreat, which the first of those are running this year in May and in September. So doing retreats is something that's at the foundation of where I started this journey. That was something I always wanted to do. And so now I figured, well, I may as well get on that
right.
and start providing that space to make that happen. So that's currently the direction that I'm going and still doing some one-on-one work, but I have a desire to reach out a bit further.
And does that include men?
I think ultimately it will include men. I am not prepared for that just yet.
Well, we're nice too, you know.
Ultimately down the road. I know, but this is sort of my core belief around this, that helping women to heal and empower themselves is healing to the masculine, will help to provide the space for the masculine to also be doing the same in
mm-hmm.
conjunction with and in support of the feminine.
I see that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So,
because yes, we all need that support. But
and Selena, would you say that it would? I don't know. You guys could all pipe in. Do you think that there's more women in a caregiver personality position?
100%.
So am I weird then?
You're just in touch with your feminine.
With my feminine
pride.
Yeah,
no, you're not weird, but you're maybe not, wouldn't be considered the norm or the average or the mean of the population in that regard. But of course it is women, because women are intrinsically more tethered to that role, to the,
yeah.
be the nurturers and caregivers. That's part of the feminine. But the problem is that it is completely out of balance.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe this, you know, this time that we're in right now, you know, there's women's movements rising everywhere for all kinds of causes. But it's all for the same core healing to be done.
Can I ask you a question? I'm not trying to be political, but we just had this discussion in the last couple of days with someone, and I forget who it was. But anyway, the reminder of the U.S. election that just happened a few months ago, 53% of white women in the United States voted for the Donald. Can you please explain that one to me?
Well, this is why we're doing this show healing the woman, okay, the caregiver type.
This is part of the patriarchy. This is that is a perfect example. And if you look at, you know, I'm certainly no expert on archetypes, but there are different archetypes that women, you know, take on. And I can't speak to this personally because I didn't get myself too wrapped up in that whole scenario. I mean, obviously, I was aware of it. You can't not be aware of it. But that archetype is very much enmeshed in sort of that patriarchal energy. And, you know, again, I can't speak to what, you know, the general overall mindset is in the U.S., but I think that is a kind of a good example that there is a lot of conditioning around how women are to be, who, you know, how they are to behave, how they are to present themselves. And it's a total imbalance because there's such a deep rejection of self that's going on with all women, I would say.
Mm-hmm. And some men too,
And, for sure. I would say even most men, right?
Yeah.
Because there's been such an unhealthy and twisted conditioning that's been imparted upon us.
Catching up with us in spades.
Well, it's all being revealed. It's all coming to conscious awareness now. Yeah. You can't ignore it. You can't hide it anymore. The veils are lifting, right? It's inevitable. It's just a matter of, you know, how are we as a collective and how are we individually going to manage the consequences of all of that reveal.
And choose a different reality.
Well, we were talking about that on the way in today, actually, about how if people were capable of expressing their own needs and felt the right to ask for what they need, we wouldn't be in this boat as a society. We would be defending our right to a clean environment. We would
Absolutely.
Be defending our right to clean food. We would be defending our right to have a balanced person in charge of the country.
To not have our leaders lie to us.
To have women and men's salaries be equal.
Oh, yes. I don't agree with that.
The only country, well, Iceland has passed legislation that requires that now.
So this is an epidemic, a suppression of core needs.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've come out of generations that are traumatized. You know, I can take a look at my mother's generation. You know, her parents came through the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge trauma, right?
Yep.
Massive trauma, which is a contractive, you know, movement within the family. And so needs, absolutely. Can you imagine going through the Depression? You can't focus on your needs with quotations around them. You have to focus on the fact that maybe you get a potato to split between a couple people for dinner.
Yeah,
it's survival. But it's not really any different now. We're still operating
Because
out of survival at whatever level, whether it's in the physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual space.
Exactly, because this has been the inheritance, right? Which in the work both you, Selena, and I do, that's the family of origin healing, the constellation therapy. There's an opportunity to unpin this, but I think as a collective, not everyone can show up at our workshop. So, you know, very critical to take a look at what do I actually need, to get in touch with it and to be honest and to witness within self that when you want to ask for something or you want to work through a needs assessment checklist and you come upon something that you desire, like feeling understood, that you don't immediately negate it with your mind. You don't replay the way that you were spoken to or the way that, you know, was unspoken that you picked up and then made your own voice in your head.
Like if you you look at this list and something comes to you that, yeah, you want that, and then you feel guilty about it immediately,
yeah,
you need to revisit that one.
So we've been trained to be a certain way.
I have my black belt in guilt, actually.
Yes, I'm aware of that.
Yeah.
You know, we've been trained collectively to be this way, and then we see all of the behavior that comes from that suppression and also that disconnection from what are our core needs.
Mm-hmm. So this seems like something that we should be discussing a little bit further. I don't think we've completely handled the subject matter. Well, what do you think?
I think it's a pretty big one.
I feel like this article is like a 10-part series that we could be talking about on the radio. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so would you
be
open?
Be broken down in chunks for sure.
Would you be open to sharing? I didn't mean to talk over you. It's just we're coming to the end of this. Would you be willing to participating with this subject matter on the show in the future?
Oh, Selena? I would love to. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. So we actually, I mean, our show goes to the top of the hour, but what we're going to do is we're going to play a segment of Tony Robbins. And my apologies to those of you who, like myself, sometimes when I hear him, I kind of cringe a little bit.
He makes you a bit nutty, I know.
Yeah, because, well...
because he is a bit nutty.
Well...
he's intense.
Well, yeah. And the bragging stuff and all that, but he has
Tony's
softened
grown up.
Over time. Yeah.
Tony's grown up.
Yeah.
So this is the 6 basic human needs that he talks about in a lot of his talks. And the whole point of this exercise is to become aware of what your own motivations are. You know, where are you operating from most of the time? So that you can grow up.
Yeah, become conscious instead of operating out of the blind spot.
Mm-hmm.
And for anybody who's interested in really looking at their needs, I did include some links to other articles talking about codependency and all of that. And also you can do a needs assessment search on the internet. There's tons of different systems out there. I found some really interesting processes to work through.
Well, speaking of needs, I think we need to end this so that we can play this thing in its entirety.
Okay.
So stay tuned, folks. We will be continuing this subject matter in the future. And Selena...
because we need to.
Yes, and Selena's agreed to participate. So that's a great and cool thing.
Yeah, happy to. Thank you.
Thanks for sharing today.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Have a great day. Bye-bye now.
Okay. So this will bring us to the top of the hour.
Here's Tony.
See you next week.
Every culture has different goals. Everybody has different desires, but we all have the same needs. What are they? Number one is the need for certainty. Certainty. Now, what the hell is certainty? Certainty is a survival need. We all need to feel certain that we can avoid pain and that ideally we can have some comfort. Why? Because continuous pain would mean continuous damage. Continuous damage eventually means death. So the need for certainty is built into every human being, and I'm going to show you now in the next few minutes, if you stay with me, and I really need you to, so make sure you stay, sit up in your chair and focused on this area. All human beings have the same 6 needs, so why do we behave differently? Because the only thing different in people is 2 things. We all have the same 6 needs, but we don't value them equally. Some people, certainty is the number one thing they value. And if they're certainty driven and you try to change anything, they freak out. They get fearful, or they get angry, or they get pissed off, because what matters most to them is keeping things the same way where they feel like they're in control. Raise your hand if you follow. That's an example. Some people, they value love much more than certainty. Some people value certainty more than love. So even though they love you, if they don't feel certain, they won't open completely. Right? Just as one example. So the difference in people, we all have the same 6 needs. The difference is which of the top 2 you value most out of these 6. Because these top 2 determine your direction in life. And direction, if you keep moving in direction, it leads you to an ultimate destination or destiny. So we want to understand what your top 2 needs are. And same thing with other people. So now, if we know what these needs are and a person values them differently, we also have to find out 2 people could have the same need, but they have a different belief about what it takes to be loved or a different need about what it takes to be certain. Some people to be certain need $10 billion. Some people to be certain just need to pray to God. Some people to be certain need to feel like they have 3 perfect children and they're there every day. Some people that feel certain because I've always figured it out. I don't know what's going to happen, but I know I'll figure it out because I always have. You can get certainty from your past. You get certainty from God. You get certainty by working out intensely. You get certainty by eating food. Too much food especially will put comfort in your body. If you overeat, all the blood goes in your stomach. You start breathing again. So we all need certainty. The only question is, it number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6 on your list? And the second question is, what does your brain say has to happen to be certain? So the first need is certainty. How can we meet our need for certainty? We can do it in ways that are positive, neutral, or negative. I can get certainty in a heartbeat if all I want to do is get really pissed off and freaked out about something. When you get angry, do you get certain? Yes or no? You better believe it. So some people get angry all the time because it's their way to get certainty in a life that's uncertain. It has all kinds of negative side effects, but it works in the moment. So listen to me now. Most people meet their needs in a way that works in the moment, but not long term. So they feel good for a short time, like a sugar high, and then they drop emotionally, and they got to do it again, whether it's food or smoking or drinking or whatever it is. So you can meet your needs in positive ways, neutral ways, or negative ways. And that's how most people meet their needs. They use a drug or alcohol or food or cigarettes or something to get comfortable, to get certainty back. But the problem is it has side effects long term. Works in the short term, doesn't the long term. So there are ways to meet your needs that are empowering, neutral, or disempowering. The parts of our life we don't like are problems. Why would we keep a problem? We're all capable of solving it. Why would we keep a problem? The only reason you have a problem that's stuck around is because it meets some of your needs. Not all of them, or you wouldn't want to get rid of it. But enough of them that it makes it hard to give up. It's kind of like, who's ever been in a relationship way too long? Let me see your show of hands. And how many knew it was wrong while you were there? Let me see your show of hands. So why the F did you stay there? Because of the uncertainty. Because, well, I'm not thoroughly happy. I'm kind of unhappy, but I might be worse if I was totally alone. What if this is the best one I'm ever going to get and I screwed it up? But what happened was most of you had that feeling, talked yourself back down into the relationship multiple times until one day you hit a threshold where your brain went, it was painful in the past, it's painful in the present, it's going to be painful in the future, I'm out of here. So there is a threshold that we can find. And if we find that threshold, we can break through it pretty damn easily. We can shift. We can get to where we really want to go. So what I want you to get is, of these six needs, we all find a way to meet them. The only difference, again, is which are your top two out of the six? And I've told you certainty so far. And what are your beliefs or rules or what's your blueprint of how to get that? By the way, jot this down. People will give up their goals and dreams to meet their needs. People will give up their goals and dreams. They'll even give up their own values to meet their needs. I'll give you an example. How many of you in this room consider yourself to be an honest person, very honest person? Raise your hand if you consider yourself to be very honest. Raise your hand nice and high. Okay, drop your hand. Raise your hand if you lie. Let me see your hands if you lie. You can explain it to me, will you? Here's how it works. See, in your mind, you know who you are. Why would someone lie who values honesty? No one told you to be honest. You want to be honest. Because if you think being honest is going to cost you one of your needs, like love or certainty, you'll lie. You'll call it a white lie, but you'll lie. Who knows what I'm talking about? Now, there's some people that never lie because they value certainty of always telling the truth so much. Right? It has to do with their rules or their belief structures. Does this make sense? So tell me something. You can meet the need for certainty so many ways, right? So here's the question. What if you were certain every moment of your life what was going to happen before it happened? What if you knew what people are going to say before they're going to say it? What if you could feel what they're going to feel? What if you knew every moment before it happened what people are going to say and do? In the beginning, that would feel really exciting. But after a while, if you know what's going to happen, when it's going to happen, how it's going to happen, tell me what you're going to feel after a while. What are you going to start to feel? Tell me. What? Bored out of your mind. That's why God, in her infinite wisdom, gave us a second human need. And that second human need is uncertainty. We have a need for uncertainty. We have a need for surprise. We have a need for variety. In fact, what's the phrase? Variety is the what of life? Spice of life. Now, how many of you in this room, raise your hand, How many of you in this room love surprises? Raise your hand if you love them. Say I. Bullshit. You love the surprises you want. The surprises you don't want, you don't want. You call them problems, don't you? So don't tell me you like surprises. You like the surprises you want. How do you get variety? You get variety in positive ways, negative ways, or neutral ways. You can get variety by learning, growing, taking on a new goal, a new challenge. You can get variety through a conversation with a friend. You can get variety by praying to God. There's so many ways to get variety, aren't there? But you can also get variety in negative ways. You can smoke a joint, and maybe that's not a negative way, but it sure will change your state. But it has side effects, right? During that time, you're not going to function maybe at the same peak or understanding. Or some people use other things, cigarettes, alcohol, anything. There's so many ways to get variety. The question is, are your ways positive, neutral, negative, or empowering? Third human need is significance. The need to feel unique, special, important. Who has the need to be needed to feel special, unique, and important? Who do you think has that need? Who has it? Tell me who. What about people who say, I don't want to be special? Do they still want to be special? Yes or no? You bet your ass they do. Thou's protest too much. Now, they don't want to be so special that you attack them. They might want to stay undercover, so to speak, but they still want to feel special. They want to feel unique. They want to feel needed. They want to feel important. So there are lots of ways to feel special. You can do it by working your ass off, taking huge risks, and achieving something to feel special. Or you can tear down everybody else that's trying to build something. Because there's two ways to have the tallest building in town. One is work your ass off, take risks, build the tallest building. The other one is blow up everybody else's building. And by the way, which one's faster? Which one's easier? Which takes less intelligence and less money? Tearing shit down. It happens faster. So that's why we've always had violence. And we always will unless there's a consciousness change. If I live in a tough part of the community, I'm in the hood, and you can walk through my community, and you don't notice me, and I feel insignificant, I might take things into my own hands to feel significant. If all of a sudden I put a gun to your head, tell me on a 0 to 10 scale, how certain am I you're going to respond to me now when I put that gun to your head, 0 to 10? 10 is absolute, 0 is not at all. Where would you put it? Quick. Yeah, 100. Is it true? But also, when I put my gun to your head, how significant am I to you in your life, even if you didn't know me a minute ago? If I got a gun to your head, how significant am I, 0 to 10? 100. I'm the most significant thing in your life, and a moment ago you didn't know I existed. And I don't need any intelligence, I don't need background, I don't need education, all I need is a gun and the will to do it. Oh, by the way, just in case there's not enough there to be an addiction, when I put that gun to your head, every time that happens, it's going to be a different game. I know you're going to respond to me. I know I'm significant, but what you're going to say and do is different, so I get variety. So you meet three needs, but violence doesn't end there. Because the fourth human need is connection and love. And most people are too afraid to love because they've loved and been disappointed, or they've loved and then lost the love, and it was so painful, that now they settle for the crumbs of connection because that's safer. So it's a form of the need, but a low level of the need, but it's still part of the need, and we got to meet it. So if you're going for connection and love, if I cut my gun to his head, on a 0 to 10, I'm a 10 of certainty. I'm a 10 of significant to him. I'm going to have a ton of variety. But are we also connected in a sick way, but deeply connected in this moment? Yes or no? On a 0 to 10, how much connection is there between our lives at this moment when I put the gun there? 100. So violence meets four of the human needs, and that's why we've always had it. That's why ISIS exists. That's why people do the stupid things they do, as they do it to try to meet their needs. Now, can you get significance in positive ways? Of course. You can be significantly more generous than anyone else, and that generosity gives you a sense of significance because you know you're really a giver. You're not trading. You're not exchanging. You really are giving, and it makes you feel full. It makes you feel significant because you know the truth. No matter what you tell people verbally, you know what's true inside, and no one can mess with that. Everyone finds a way to be significant. Most people find a way to be significant by having a significant problem. Why? Because if I'm really successful, you might like me for a while, but after a while, most people get annoyed with someone who's always happy and successful. If you want to know what the biggest addiction is in our culture, it's not alcohol, it's not some form of prescription drug, it's not an illicit drug, it's problems. Because problems allow us to try to deal with our deepest fear that we're not enough And we won't be loved by saying, it's not me, it's this problem. It's just that I have ADHD. It's just that I've been through this. It's just so most people meet their needs through problems. Unfortunately, they don't meet their deepest needs. Because up until now, we've described the first four needs, which are the basic needs of your personality. But what will everyone, by the way, finds a way to meet these first four needs. Even if to lie to yourself, if you got to work 20-hour days, you will find a way to meet your need for certainty, uncertainty, significance. Even if it's just you have worse problems than anybody else. Connection to yourself, you will find a way. But the final two needs are the needs that create fulfillment. And they are the spiritual needs, not religious, but spiritual. The fifth human need is growth. We've already said it. We grow or we what? So growth is life. And if you want a one-word key to happiness, I'll give it to you right now because it's real obvious having worked with millions of people. Progress equals happiness. If you're not even where you want to be, you're still overweight, you're still financially struggling, you're still not where you want to be in your career, but you start working out. You haven't lost the weight yet, but you start feeling better, you start making progress. Or you start to change that business, still not there yet, but you're making progress. Or change that relationship, or change your body, or change your health. Anytime you start making progress, your happiness will go through the roof. Anytime you achieve things and you don't set up something new to go for quickly, you'll lose momentum, and in a short time, you won't be so happy. Because the law of familiarity will come in, and this thing that once was this big dream will now just be something that you're used to. So the purpose of a goal is not to get the goal. The purpose of a goal is who we become to achieve it. What you get will never make you happy. Who you become will make you very happy or very sad, depending upon how you approach it and what you do with your life. And then the sixth human need is the need for contribution, the need to step out of ourselves. See, how many of you in this room, when something great happens, how many of you can't help yourself? You immediately want to share that with somebody you love. How many immediately that's your first thought? Why? Because you can only feel so much yourself. I don't care if it's sex, drugs, rock and roll, whatever it is. There's only so much pleasure you can internally have. You want to share that concert with someone. You want to share that experience with someone because by sharing it becomes more. It's more than just you. Growth and contribution are our fifth and sixth needs. They are our spiritual needs. They are the needs that fulfill us. And when people do stupid things, they're just starving to meet their needs and they're finding something that isn't very effective. Or it's effective short term, but hurts them long term. And because you've done this, you can have compassion.
You've been listening to Shift Happens on Kootenai Co-op Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, you can tune in on Sunday at 4 o'clock because it will re-air at that time. Or you can check out shifthappensnow.ca and check it out on the website. Have a good week.